Known Jack for quite a while. He's my mentor, and I have learned so much by being with him and following him and following his training and stuff of that nature. He covers property, social media, real estate, hotelier, which I dare say he'll talk about tonight. Jack used creative ways and unique ways to help the property professional grow their portfolio, their network, and the vision is being more to have more fun and to be more creative. And I'm sure he's going to go into a lot more detail. So, can I introduce to you all Jack Duar?
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you. Thank you for the great introduction, by the way. I feel that one quality that makes the biggest difference in anyone's life, that's either you want more peace in your life or you want to be more successful, that's humility. You gotta remain humble, you gotta keep your head down, and you gotta put the work in. With a lot of humility, I want to make this session very, very interesting. Okay. And I'll do it with as much humility as I potentially can. Okay. Because when I see events I come across, there's just sometimes one person speaking, which is never, ever a good idea. So let's make this session interactive. At the same time, I'm going to make this more interesting by actually asking every single person in the room to challenge me. Okay. Like I said, I'm doing with a lot of humility. Challenge me on what you think is the best way forward with what's happening in the market. Okay. So if you stop me and say, okay, let me challenge you on this. What do you think is going to happen in this space? What do you think is going to happen in that? How can I deal with this space or this aspect of my business? It just becomes very, very interesting because now it's almost like, we're in a boxing ring and we're challenging each other. Just becomes a lot more interesting. Okay. I'll share a couple of things that I feel that are going to work in the property industry. And where is that experience coming from is I'm a finance broker. That's my bread and butter. We have over 200 active finance cases. That's property finance cases, mortgages, buy-to-lets, HMOs, bridge loans, development loans, you name it. We all have active cases, all sorts of active cases. So I get to see a lot more behind the scene than most people do. We've done developments. We did a development in Wembley worth 4 million GDV. We've done flips. I am at the moment scaling a hotel chain. We have three hotels under management. We have another one which is about to complete. So we've been through the ropes, if I may say so. And I have built other businesses which I've sold previously as well. I built a chauffeur company from scratch to 47 drivers. This is in London, and we sold that back in 2014. I can tell you now, anyone who ever says I've built a successful business without actually working on multiple ideas that failed will probably be telling you a lie. Mine is, I failed on 10 before I became successful in one. Okay. And that has been the average. Okay. But at the same time, property is a space where, you bring your money, you park it, or you keep it there to grow. You look back 10, 15, 20 years later, depending on where you invest or what sort of strategy you invest in. That's the space you come into when you are in property. But at the same time, if you want to go full time into property, you got to take it full time. You got to do, all you can in the most creative way to stand out and scale your business. I'm a massive believer in if you keep it small, you're always going to find it difficult. Okay. So I am not at all in the space of someone comes and tells me, let's keep it small. Let's keep it safe. I do not play safe. I do not believe in safety. If you play safe, the likely is you're going to fail. Okay. You increase your chances. The probability increases massively when you try and keep safe, say, play safe, and when you don't try and scale. Yes, scalability comes with its own risks, but at the same time, it's better. It's a better risk to take to scale rather than keep it small. And that's exactly what we do as well. Like, irrespective of the the strategy that I am working on at any given time, I'm always looking to scale that strategy, irrespective of how or what happens with that strategy. I feel at this moment of time, there is a massive opportunity out there that's about to come. It's not happening at the moment. It's slowly coming, but it's going to be, you'll be able to see massive changes in the next 6 to 12 months time when repossessions start. Okay. Interest rates are already high up. Many people are already not able to afford. I mean, the road that I live on, it's a road you never, ever see a property on sale. Ever. We can already see 3 properties on sale. Okay. And that's a very good sign of what's about to come. So if you are ready with your leadership skills, with your persuasion skills, with the right investors or the right money in your account, you are about to see a massive downturn. Well, when I say massive, I'd say maybe 10, 15%, maybe even 20%. No one knows exactly what number, but 10 to 15% is about a good range of downturn that we're going to see. And if you can grab those opportunities, someone is desperate, wants to sell, going through a divorce, going through a medical condition, you know, maybe just can't pay the mortgage anymore, you know, whatever the situation might be. And if you're ready with cash, you could potentially get some really good deals out there. Like I said, it could be your cash, it could be investors' cash, or it could be, you know, cash coming from wherever you could potentially bring the money by remortgaging your property or whatever that might be. But at the same time, there's going to be massive opportunities when it comes to the, what I call the BRR space, which is buy, refurb, refinance, and sell or rent or whatever that might be. Okay. At the same time, I feel that I also feel that a lot of people are invested into buy to lets, which is actually a really bad space to be in. If you have a buy to let property, consider, like Anthony was asking earlier, consider going into social housing. Okay. Because that's going to give you a much higher return on your money invested in comparison to buy to let. I would say pull out your money if you can, but if you can't, go into social housing space, or maybe even use it for short-term rental, which is, you know, your Airbnb style or booking.com style. You're likely to make 5 times more money than what you make in buy to let at the moment. Okay. And there's tax advantages and all sorts of things when you start to use your single residential property for short-term lets and so on and so forth. Okay. So instead of using it for, you know, single let, you could use it for social housing, or you could go and take it a bit step further by using it for short-term rental, and that will give you a much, much higher return on your money invested. I would say in comparison to BTL, your social housing should give you at least 75%, maybe even 100% more in comparison to BTL. And if you're going into short-term rental in comparison to BTL, you would make at least 300 to 400% more, if not more than that in comparison on your return on your money invested. Okay. But you might ask me, okay, what is it that's working, Jack, in the industry? What else is working? I know we know you're saying, okay, there's going to be opportunities to buy. That's not now, but obviously it's coming slowly. You're going to see more. But what else is working in the industry? I'm going to share 2 things with you. Well, 3, actually. One is planning uplifts, okay, which has always been there. But most of the people don't focus. It's a hell of a skill to learn. It takes a bit of a time. It's going to take you at least 12 to 24 months to learn the skill of you know, being able to buy a piece of land, get planning permission, get the planning uplift, and without developing it, you actually go and sell that planning uplift. It's a hell of a skill. But it's a skill that you must learn if you are into property industry, or if you're focusing full-time in property industry, or even part-time. It's a hell of a skill. At the same time, this is the strategy that will pay you the maximum return, not just on your money invested, which is secondary, but on your time investment in the long term. Not short term, long term. In the short term, for the first 12 to 24 months, you're only just in the learning stage. But then after that, you get to a point where you'll start to do one deal and you'll see the amount of effort that you put in into it for the return of your time and money invested is much higher in comparison to the rest of the strategies that are available out there. The second one is hotels, lease hotels. We are investing ourselves into it. If you'd like to learn more, please reach out to me. We have some awesome deals on the table and we are looking to raise more funding. If you invest with us, we will give you training and mentoring for absolutely free. But here's a clue for you. You want to look for areas with the highest traffic. That is people coming into town just to chill, to party, to stay, to relax, or whatever that might be. You want to look for areas with the highest traffic. Okay? And then the third, which it actually needs to be right at the top, which is working on tech ideas in the property space. We actually started, and I'll give you a clue so you can see where we are coming from, the context around this. Within the PEN space, and some of you might know, which is Property Entrepreneurs Network, within the PEN space, we've started a spin-off called Ideas Viral, which is actually a digital agency behind PEN. And we as a company are investing into tech ideas. So if you have a tech idea in the property space, reach out to us. You know, in the worst case scenario, you'll get feedback on the idea. You'll lose nothing. You're not paying anything. So you'll get some feedback. In the best case scenario, we might end up investing in your startup. But here is a clue for you when it comes to tech startups in the property space. You want to look for a pain. Okay, what is the pain? I mean, some of the pains that I see are, you know, builders not turning up on time or not being able to find reliable builders or tradespeople. I also see the blockchain space exploding in the property space very, very soon, probably in the next 3 to 5 years. I already know two startups which are going to do really well in the property space of blockchain. So if you have an idea in that space, reach out to us, we'll look into it. But you want to look for, like I said, gaps in the property space based on technology. Because brick and mortar businesses are getting more and more tougher, but with the time goes by, because simply our government doesn't care. You know, the bills go up 100%, they don't care. You know, we could starve and not have money to eat, but the government doesn't give a shit. Okay, in simple words, right? So when you're going into a brick and mortar business, just be aware that you're heading into something, you're gonna be paying loads and loads of bills like the hotel business, okay? Now, I'm not saying it's a bad business, it's still a good business to be in. But at the same time, just be aware that the government does not care, okay? Likewise, with the hotel business, another problem we have, and Jennifer will be probably observing this as well, is the train strikes, okay? I mean, if there's train strikes, people who are coming into towns to party, they don't want to necessarily drive, they want to take a train, and there's train strikes, which means that affects the hotel businesses, okay? Again, I'm not saying it's a bad business, still a good business to be in. It still pays much, much higher return on your money invested, but at the same time, it comes with its own challenges just because it's a brick and mortar business. But when you invest into a technology business, you don't have these problems, right? You can register your company in, you know, Channel Islands and not worry about the taxes a lot, or you don't need to worry about these changes in the market or fluctuations in the market. You're not going to get massively off them. So stuff like that becomes, you know, sort of major advantages when you're scaling a technology business. So I feel, like I said, these three or four spaces are going to do really well. Technology, property, prop technology, or fintech, which is finance technology. Also, like I said, the repossessions, which means the BRR strategy is going to do well for those who are ready with the cash and the skills. Lease hotels or hotels at the core are going to do well, depending on where you buy. Location is the key. Leveraging is key. Proximity is key. And scalability is key. And planning uplifts will always remain the case. If you're skilled and you know where to find the land to be able to get planning permissions, I'll give you an example, okay? We did a development in Wembley about 2 years ago. It took us on nearly 3 years to do it. It was a 4 million GDV project. I was an investor on board. I was also operationally involved in the project. We ended up with roughly about 23, 24% net profit margin on the 4 million GDV. But we did another project besides that, where we ended up making roughly shy of £700,000 just with the planning uplift without going through the hassle of actually building. So we bought a property. When I say bought, we actually took an option agreement. We ended up taking permission. It was a really large detached property. We ended up taking permission for 6 flats and 2 semis. And we ended up selling that option agreement and making a profit of nearly £700,000 just by taking planning permission and without building it. Okay, that's just a clue for you. So something for you to pursue if you're not already doing it. That's me, very fast, very, you know. Now I would like you to ask me questions, maybe challenge me to the best of your ability. And I think that's going to make it more interesting for everyone who are watching this and this recorded as well. So over to you, Jennifer. Anthony, I can see you top of the list. You are an experienced person. I'd love to see you challenging me.
All right, Jack, that was a good presentation. And we are ready for our challenge, yes?
So let me say something, okay? Yes. I'm only challenging everyone, not because I'm big-headed, nothing. I'm just want to make it more interesting. It's a lot of humility. I promise you, the only way you're going to ever be successful is when you keep your head down with a lot of humility. So that's the challenge for you. And yes. Be gone.
Yes. Regarding planning uplift.
Yes.
You know, buying a land and then try to get planning permission. Do you advise novice to go into that, or do you need to have experience first before you can go into that? Because it takes a long time to get the land, get planning permission, and even if you want to sell it on or develop, it takes quite a long time.
Go for it and go for it now. Yeah. But just be aware, and then you already know this, I'm just a very polite reminder for you, yeah, which is just be aware that you're not going to make money immediately. It's probably going to take you 24 months to the bare minimum before you see your first deal over the line. Okay? So be prepared that you're going to be investing a day or two a week, but you're not going to be making any money for the next 24 months or maybe even longer. So you got to make sure that you have the money to back you up, which I have a feeling you already do, just so you have income and that you can sustain your lifestyle and so on and so forth. Don't end up losing your lifestyle or anything beyond, you know, just because you're focusing on something that you're still not, don't have enough experience, but, you know, just go for it. Just put your head down and say, you know what, I'm going to do this irrespective of the pain I'm going to go through. You have done this things previously. You know, when you start, you're going to be in that pain zone. Just put your head down and say, I'm going to do it. And that's the end of it.
Okay. Why I ask you this is because one of my friends, he's been in property longer than me. He had the loads of property around Southeast London. In fact, 2 years ago, he bought a property cash around this area. And he said to me, Tony, if I'm your age, I will look for land, get the planning permission, build block of flats and things like that. I said to him, you know, it looks attractive, but there are a lot of risks involved, you know. But
Anthony,
he made his money in property, you know, as I say, but just before lockdown, he bought a property cash, 1.1 million, you know, Southeast London here.
Anthony,
you know, yep.
Here's two things for you. First, you don't have to necessarily invest a lot of your own money. You can take option agreements.
Okay.
Which means a £1 option agreement.
Explain that term, please, Jack.
Yeah.
So instead of buying the land, you go and do a deal with the landowner by saying, okay, we'll agree to pay you a certain amount, but in 12 to 24 months' time, subject to planning, and then you sign an agreement based on that. It's called an option agreement, and you only pay £1 towards it, plus the legal cost. So the only cost to you in that case becomes the legal cost, the £1 agreement, and the planning application that you're going to go through. That's the only cost that you're going to go through. Obviously, your architects and the planners that get involved in all of this. That's the only cost you're going to. So focus on those. So you don't necessarily lose a lot of money into it. At the same time, I'm a massive believer in two things. One is that if you are not taking risk, that means you're taking massive risk by not taking risk. And the second is that how much pain tolerance do you have? If you don't have enough pain tolerance, you're never gonna scale or be massively successful. You know, I've been fortunate enough to get to a point in my life where when someone speaks with me about, let's say, earning 10,000 a month, which is, let's say, 100 grand a year, for me, it's like, you know what? You're really thinking too small. You should be really thinking about a million plus rather than just 100 grand. I'm not saying getting to a million plus in a year is easy. What I'm saying is that if you shoot for the stars, you're likely to land on the moon. Okay? But you gotta focus and you gotta target a million plus, maybe even 2 million. Because when you target a million, the likely is you'll probably end up on 500,000, which is better than 100 grand. Okay? So, but that means that you gotta take loads of risks, reduce your risk by working on option agreements. But at the same time, one thing that you massively need is pain tolerance. I believe the most important skill, and I say skill, which is, that means something you can learn and acquire to be successful in any field in the world, is pain tolerance. I feel a CEO of a large company or a medium company, in comparison to someone who's running a small business, the only difference is the pain tolerance. So if you don't have that pain tolerance, learn to acquire the skills. Go through some pain consciously, intentionally, and keep building towards that pain tolerance. Because without pain tolerance, you're just never going to get to a million again. Well, I believe you're never going to get, unless you just become lucky and, you know, come across a deal and you get it done. But consciously, you're just never going to get there without pain tolerance. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thanks, Jack. I have enough pain tolerance. That's why I got the way I got. But, you know, moving on forward, you know, somebody gave me that idea. So it's playing on my mind and it's got to happen.
Yeah. If you don't have pain tolerance, come to gym with me one day. I'll help you with it.
Can I ask a question? Can I ask a question?
Yes, please.
Is
it Fiona?
No, it's Agnes. Sorry.
Agnes, sorry. Yeah. Fiona had her hand up.
Oh, Fiona's got her hand up. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, Agnes. No, go on.
No, it's all right. Thanks a lot.
Sorry, Agnes. Yes, go ahead. Is it Fiona? Sorry, my apologies. Okay. Okay, Fiona, go on.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that I'm quite interested to know how the process in buying land and stuff like that. I already have two plots of land which I've had for a number of years.
Okay.
One in Boreham Wood and one in Cambridgeshire. But I don't really know the process in, you know, doing what you've just been describing, in getting the planning permission, having a plan, whatever, and then selling it based on that rather than doing the construction myself. And so I'm quite interested to know what the next steps are. Okay, I've got the land. What do I do next?
Okay, Fiona, I'm going to give you my number. This is not a question I can answer in an event in five minutes.
Yes.
I'm just going to give you my number. Reach out to me.
I will do.
He's putting it in the chat.
I'll put it in the chat box, Fiona. Yeah. Reach out to me. When you do, please refer Jennifer, that you came through Jennifer.
Yes.
So, reach out to me. I'll be more than happy to answer some of your questions and maybe help you in the process as well.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you. See, when you try and make it more interesting with challenging people, things happen. Guys, roll on. Bring the next challenge, please.
I just wanted to ask, with the cost of living, I'll use the word crisis, you know, with, all our electricity and gas, what do you think about service accommodation?
Remember, in service accommodation, So service accommodation. Interest question, a similar thing applies to hotels. Okay. It's quite a big hit. It's quite a big hit. You know, your bills are almost double, in some cases even more than double. You have absolutely no choice but to pass on to the tenants. But here's the trick. you need to balance absorbing maybe some of the cost, depending on where you know the tenants are going to leave, between and where the tenants might just be, okay, you know what, I have to pay because somewhere has gone up. So you know, it's almost like, okay, can you pass the hold 100%? In some cases, it'll be a yes. In some cases, it might be a no. And some of that cost that you might have to absorb yourself, which means a slightly lower return on your money invested.
Okay.
There is absolutely nothing else you can do. I mean, if I tell you myself, I am a person of automation. I don't like doing one thing and going back on it again. So we have direct debits going to everyone. Absolutely everyone, everything is paid by direct debits. And I am the first person who canceled most of the direct debits. Okay? Because I just don't believe in these utility companies. And guess what? I now have a complaint procedure going between two different utility companies because I believe they're charging way too much. So, you know, again, it's a pain that you have to go through if you're in that space. The only thing you can do is pass on either 100%, or if not, then maybe some of it and absorb some yourself. You have no other choice.
Okay.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I was going to say, Jack, you touched on BRR. For those who don't understand what that means, could you just
elaborate a bit? So BRR is buy, refurb, refinance, and then maybe sell or rent, whatever your strategy might be. I feel renting is a better strategy than selling it. As long as you get the right deal and be able to have 25% net profit margins in the deal, you'll be able to refinance and pull out most of your money, if not all of it. That's a good strategy to be in because there's going to be repossessions out there. There's going to be people struggling to pay their mortgages, and you can go in and buy their properties, maybe do a little bit of work, add some value, extension at the back, extension to the side, extension to the top, whatever that might be in your case. Most people don't know that you can actually extend. In many cases, a 3-meter extension in many properties is actually just, you know, permitted development, which means you don't even have to get a permission. The 6-meter is more, you know, you have to get a planning permission. So there are always chances that you can extend a property to the side or to the back or to the top or whatever, and add some value and then be able to refinance. That's a great space to be in because there's going to be loads of repossessions, which means that if you have some cash ready, or if you have an investor to back you up, that you would be able to find these deals pretty easily. Not now, but it's kind of getting going in that direction. Maybe in a few months' time, but I already see the signs in the market. You'd be able to find these deals, be able to get them at a very good price, maybe 10, 15, 20, 25% below, and then be able to do some work, which means you add more value, and then go back and refinance, pull out, like I said, if not all of your money, at least most of your money, and then you have a cash flowing asset sitting behind you. Maybe don't use that asset or property as a buy-to-let. You just use it as a social housing, which pays you more, or even short-term lets, which is your serviced accommodations, which will again pay you a lot more than buy-to-let. I hope that kind of gives an overview.
Yeah, that does.
Sorry for those who feel that I speak fast.
Yeah, you do.
I do speak fast.
You do. And the other one, yeah, you do, and I'm telling you.
All right.
Sorry, Jack. What was your business called? What was your?
So Agnes, our business is called Property Entrepreneurs Network. Okay. Jennifer would be able to give you a bit more into it. If you'd like to get more involved into it, there's loads of ways you can get involved. You can become an inner circle member. You can, you know, take mentoring from us, consulting. We provide consulting as well on many different levels. So there's loads of things that you can get involved into. But please do ask Jennifer, she'll be able to guide you on something.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
The other thing, blockchain, I heard you float through that.
Yes.
Explain that, please.
Okay, so I may not necessarily be the best person to explain blockchain, but blockchain, in simple words, is, you know, like you go through solicitors now, okay? And you go through these contracts. Imagine a situation where you don't have to call a solicitor, but you just exchange contracts on a simple click.
Is that a good idea?
That's blockchain for you. Mm. It's gonna explode at some point. It's very, very initial stages, But at some point, blockchain will explode and solicitors will not have a job, unfortunately.
Wow.
Okay.
So if there's a problem, what happens?
Blockchain is going to be super secure.
Okay.
But even if there is a problem, then there is going to be, at some point, there'll be regulations. There's always problems. We've seen FTX going down, $32 billion company. There's always problems in everything. Everything comes with its own advantages and disadvantages and negatives and positives. Yes, initially, there's going to be problems with blockchain, but blockchain at some point will explode. And that was a very simple example for you, but blockchain will be used at everything that we do in our life at the moment. Imagine you're buying a car, okay? You go through this process of transferring money, going and seeing the car, going through the logbook, you know, doing your road tax and insurance. Imagine everything on a blockchain, making a call, car gets delivered, everything on blockchain gets done. Okay? That's what you're going to start to see. Again, I'm giving very simple answers to something which is a lot more complicated in nature.
Okay. Thank you.
Jack, so blockchain will cut out a lot of middlemen in the process of property sales. Is that
pretty
what you're
much
saying?
Every middleman out there, yes.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. Unfortunately, we're going to have, in the next 10 years, we're going to have mass unemployment. And that is inevitable. This is not something anyone, most can't see. I'll give you an example, okay? I have a few people that I know personally who work in California, in the Silicon Valley. I also know people who work in the Indian Silicon Valley of Bangalore. These people are 10 years ahead of us in the sense of the common people that we are. That means they're going to launch things that you will see now that they've been working, you know, they can almost see 5 and 10 years ahead of us. And they're going to launch these blockchains very, very soon. And when they come out, it's almost like a solicitor will look at it and say, you know, what the hell happened to my job? Or an architect will look at it and say, oh, what the hell happened to my job? Or any of these professionals that, you know, finance brokers, for example, I'm a finance broker. I'm very well prepared that I'm not going to have an income in the next 5 to 10 years from that strategy. Okay. That's why we have other strategies in place to bring the income. But finance brokers are not going to have any income in the next 5, 10 years. Likewise, you're going to see many other things which are going to disappear. Then the whole industries are going to disappear when the blockchain really starts to explode.
Marcia, I think your hand is up. Go ahead, please.
Jenny, if my hand is up, that must be a mistake, darling.
Okay.
I'll give you another example.
I'm just listening.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I'll give you another funny example. Ian is here. He's into construction. You're going to see more and more of modular builds, which means off-site constructions. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, the more builders start to give pain to people, I always say there's no builder who's not going to give you pain. You just need to find which gives you the least pain. But remember, the more pain builders start to give people, the more people are going to head towards the off-site construction, modular construction, which means the builders are not going to be required. They're going to disappear.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was at a network event and they were actually showing that. Jack.
Yep.
They actually showed how they build it off-site.
Yep.
And then they just come and they've got these big metal boring things that they bore into the ground and attach it on. So I actually did see that.
Just for those who don't know, I can't remember the exact number, but China built one of the tallest buildings in modular construction in a period of 28 days. One of the tallest buildings in China, modular construction built within 28 days, you know. So again, these are all technology-based that are coming into the picture. We've taken a spin, it's almost like a spin-off of BEN, where we are now prepared to invest into technology platform. So if you are thinking of a gap, if you have an idea in your mind or someone you know, ask them to reach out to us. You know, like I said, in the worst case scenario, they get feedback, which is again free. And in the best case scenario, they attract some sort of investment for us.
Someone's asking about whether you can get a mortgage on modular houses.
Of course you can. If you drive around West London these days, half of the buildings on the left or the right are all modular buildings, and they're going up in the floors as well. They can all get decent mortgages. Not a problem at all.
Okay, cool. Anyone else have any other question?
Anyone else wants to make it interesting by challenging me on something?
Yeah, hi Jack, Hazel here. Just had a question in connection with land. You see kind of cheap bits of land on the auction sites. Is it, do you think the prices of land will go up even if you just buy to hold and then to resell?
The answer is you shouldn't do that.
You should.
Because if you're buying auction land,
That
means it's already in the market. The likely is that land is not going to get planning permission.
Yeah.
You want to look for land which has the potential for planning permission. That means within residential zones or close to residential zones, even if it's a brownfield or a greenfield belt site, it has to be where there is some sort of potential to get some sort of planning permission. The plots that you look at in auction, they remotely don't even have a chance of getting planning permission. And the likely is that if you buy something, you're going to lose.
I was just thinking, instead of keeping the money in the bank, buy a piece of land, even if you're going to sell it in 2 years' time.
No.
In the middle of the country somewhere.
Don't think it's a good idea.
You might not be able to sell it when you come to do so.
That's land speculation. It's not investment.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's not investment.
Hey, so give me your money, babe. So I'll take care of it for you.
Yeah, Jennifer will look after it.
Can I ask a question, please, Jack, on what you've just said about that?
Go on, Agnes, please.
You said look for land that isn't already in the market. So how do you do that?
Again, it's not something I can teach you in a very quick session.
Sure.
If you'd like to learn more, reach out. I'd be more than happy to share some more. You know, it's not something I can teach you over a very quick session. It's just impossible. You know, it's not.
There are ways, though. There are ways.
In fact, Agnes, I can tell you, it's something that will take you at least 12 months as a bare minimum to learn. It's not something you can learn even in a week or a month.
Yeah.
There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, okay.
I am learning as we speak.
Yeah. Even with the software that's out there, Jack?
Yes, you can learn some of it from that. We have a membership. We have a subscription of that. You can use Nimbus Maps. You can use Land Insight. Yeah. But again, you're not going to learn much from the software. You still have to learn the skill from a person who is physically doing it.
Okay, fair enough. All right. So thank you so much, Jack. I appreciate it. It's been brilliant tonight.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Quite a lot from that.
Yes, I'll be talking to Jack later on regarding Blackpool. My man is selling Blackpool.
As long as
Michaela doesn't believe in it.
Oh, so you want to come to Blackpool now?
Yes, yeah.
Anthony, we do have an opportunity as we speak, so do reach out now because those opportunities are almost like they come and go very quickly, okay? So there's an opportunity out there. Just reach out to me now.
Okay? All right, no problem.
Awesome. Brilliant. And so thank you.
Can I ask Jack another question?
Yes, go on.
How are you able to do all these businesses, different businesses, and you know, how do you focus? Because you seem to be doing a lot of things.
Okay.
Do you have a team of people? And
okay, so I must say I have a team of people. I delegate 90%, if not more, of everything that I do. So I don't do a lot of stuff that you might look at. I must say one thing. A lot of people believe in the work-life balance. Okay? There's nothing called work-life balance. Okay, unless you're obsessed with your work and your potential, reaching your full potential, you can't do everything, okay? The best strategy normally is to focus on one thing, okay? I am in that space at the moment where we are doing two or three things, but eventually I want to just focus on one thing. Okay. So it's not necessarily a good strategy to focus on three and four different things at the same time. It's always good practice to build one. This is what we tend to do anyway. We build one, we get onto the second one, and so on and so forth. That's what we've been doing so far. But eventually, I want to get to a point where I'm only focused on one thing and one thing only. But I, like I said, you have to be obsessed. You have to be obsessed. I come from a background, Anthony, where, you know, I came as an immigrant. I've woken up on days with no money to eat, okay? So when I look at myself, and with a lot of respect, in, you know, when there's a bit of comparison, you know, the one thing that really I have, which 99.9% of the people in the world don't have, which is hunger, okay? And the reason for that hunger is very, very simple, okay? I literally am an immigrant, and I have no choice but to get up and really achieve something for my life. At the same time, I also feel that most people waste their life by not just using their time, but building yourself as a human being to a point where you're actually of service to another person. And this is not something people do. You know, I'm doing this session, I'm not necessarily making anything out of it, but I know by heart that I'm serving people. And when I look back at my life, I don't want to be on my deathbed thinking I never served anyone, I never helped anyone, I never really did do things that I wanted to do in the first place. You know, one of the biggest regrets in your deathbed is, you know, I didn't do this. I just don't want to be that person. I want to do everything. Okay, I want to experience everything. I want to really go and serve as many human beings as possible in the best of my ability. You know, I got to a point, Anthony, and I'm going to cut this short because I know this, you know, you're going to speak as well. But I got to a point where I was seriously depressed. Okay. So getting to a point from being seriously depressed to a point where, you know what, I said, okay, how do I put my head down and build a human being that's going to be of some value to people? I ended up reading well over 1,000 books. Okay. I am even now at a point where I read a book a week. I'm always taking trainings. I'm always taking mentoring. I'm always speaking with consultants. We had a consultant on board. We were paying £1,000 a day in our development. So we are always in that space of learning and evolving into the person that you're meant to be, reaching your full potential.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, Jack.
Thank you.
I think I've just seen two other hands. There's Isabella and Fiona. Go ahead, Fiona, as you're on camera.
Okay, yeah. Just a quick question again to Jack about the same land issue. I was just thinking, instead of selling the land on, you know, to, you know, off plan basically, would it be possible to do a lease agreement so that at least I could then pass that on to my son and or grandchildren?
Mm.
I'm slightly confused about your question. So is it about passing your asset to your posterity?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, instead of selling that, the plots of land off
that
plan,
you already own, right?
Yeah, that I would basically sign a lease agreement with them so that I'm still the freeholder of the land.
Yep.
And then I can then will that to my grandchildren.
Okay, so to answer your question, there's an easier way of doing it. You could do it the way you're saying as well. I think this is a bit more complicated. The easier way is to create a trust.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yes, yeah.
When you create a trust, you become the trustee. You practically now don't own anything. Eventually, when you get to a point, you avoid paying all this inheritance tax and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. At the same time, but I say avoid, but there's a way of doing it in the trust. Again, even though I'm a qualified financial advisor, I'm not regulated, so I can't advise you on this, but I can tell you how it's done. You go and speak with a financial advisor or an estate planner, they'll create a trust for you. Everything goes into a trust. Now you're only a trustee. You don't physically own anything. And at the point of when you want to pass on to your posterity, all you got to do is make them a trustee, and they will pay less taxes, you will pay less taxes, and you will not have all this hassle.
No. Okay, then I actually already have a trust.
Okay.
No, but I'm talking about, okay, so the you the bench that I was just talking to you about yep. the plots of land that I have.
Yep.
So mm-hmm. instead of selling the land,
yep.
do you understand? I would prefer to retain it.
Yeah.
Do you understand? So
yes, I understand that.
Sign, and then sign a leasehold agreement. So then yep.
that you could do that, yes.
100 years.
You could do that. You could do that, Fiona. The question is,
yeah,
if it's already under trust, why would you do that? Again, no. if you want to do it, you can do it. The question is, why would you do it if it's already under trust?
Oh, I see what you're saying. So if it's already in a trust, I don't mm-hmm. need to do a lease agreement.
Yeah, exactly.
Why complicate things? Again, if you want to go in that direction, that's absolutely fine. But I just see it as a more complicated way of doing something simple.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Mm. I'm a bit confused. I'm a bit confused.
Agnes, 1 minute. Let me get Isabella. So, yeah, go ahead, Isabella.
Sorry. I had sort of two comments and a question, so I'll try and be super quick. It was just referring to actually one of Agnes's earlier points about the plots of land when they're not on market. I was going to say that would be an off market, and you can have that with properties or you can have that with land. And the best way for that is you build up good connections with estate agents. So I've done a couple of off market deals. It's doable. But yeah, it just takes a lot of time.
Isabella, please do connect with me.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you. And the other thing with serviced accommodation, it is, I really enjoyed the conversation. I think, unfortunately, it is something we have to pass on to the consumers, like you said. Although another thing I've seen is that if you've got some data on how your serviced accommodation is performing, you can add in fees for certain amenities that not all the customers will have. So it only affects certain ones, such as a larger cancellation fee and extending that to not just 24 hours, but 48 hours. And if you know, 20% of the time people do cancel, you bring in slightly more revenue that way as well. So it's worth just looking at things like, do they want add-ons? How much are they willing to pay for that? How consistently does that come through? And in that way, most of the people, 80%, aren't affected by it. But those that sort of see it as a unavoidable fee that they sign in the terms and conditions, that can be a potential way around bringing in a bit of money. And sorry, my question I was going to ask Jack, so thank you, that was a brilliant talk.
Let me congratulate you on your creativity and your head on your head.
Oh, thank you.
Head on your head.
No, I love being creative, and like property is a huge passion, so it's something I love thinking about. My question to you is the favorite one I love asking anyone in property, which is, if you were starting out today and you had £10,000, what would you do? What would you invest in? What would your strategy be? Would it be lease option agreements? Would it be serviced accommodation, especially in today's market? Because it's just really interesting to think about.
Okay, I'll do two things. Okay, well, there's two or three things you could potentially do. With £10,000, which is really nothing in the country we live in, okay? The only thing you can do is serviced accommodation. Mm. If I had only £10,000, I would buy something I would take something in central London.
Yeah.
Which is, I will do all my work and the research for the most highest demand area, which is near universities in the central London, which is Mayfair and Knightsbridge and all of those areas. Okay, or near universities, which is again the highest growth, highest demand areas. And I'd take a serviced accommodation there. One serviced accommodation in that region can potentially pay you £5,000 a month, which means you could recover your money within literally 2 months' time. And I would massively, massively invest in knowledge. If you don't have a lot of money to take trainings and mentoring, go and read as many books as you can, so you can get to a point where you can become a consultant. As a consultant, which is a lot of people miss this, as a property consultant, depending on the space that you take, you can potentially make a six-figure income. Okay? Yeah. So just be aware of that. As a project manager, six-figure income, pretty easy. As a, for example, what I do, someone comes to me, says, I want to learn about finance. I want to see how, you can get me a finance deal done. I can get a finance deal. We made 39 grand from a single finance deal. Okay, for me, it's a common occurrence to do deals worth 5, 10, 15 grand commission just doing finance deals. Again, money invested in knowledge. We also provide trainings and all sort of consulting behind the scene. Again, it comes from knowledge. So I'd heavily invest in knowledge, because if you can't take trainings, sit down and read as many books as you can, get hands-on in the property space, and then do it fast. Don't slow. Do it like literally a book a week, maybe two a week. And then you look back 12 months later, And then you'll message me and say, Jack, thank you for that strange recommendation. I only spent £200 on the books, but now I can go and charge £1,000 a day, maybe project managing or doing something behind the scene just as a consultant.
Thank you. That's a brilliant answer. Yeah, I think it's such a tricky question. So thank you. And I agree, mentoring and investing in yourself is one of the best things you can do. So thank you.
Agnes was confused.
Well, I was confused with your answer that you gave regarding the I forgot who it was asked whether it was a good idea to, instead of selling the land, should she lease it?
It was her comment rather than my comment. Were you confused about what I said or what she said?
Yeah, no, you were saying not leasing it. Why should she lease it? I don't understand.
So I think her intention behind what she was trying to do or thinking about it is that she wants to make sure that she doesn't sell she doesn't give the freehold to her grandchildren or children, but just lease them, you know. But instead, I feel that it might be a better option, which she already has done, which is to put them under a trust. When you put something in a trust...
Yeah, I understand how a trust works fully.
Now you don't own that asset, the trust does. Which means now you are a trustee of that trust. So now that you don't own it and the trust does, whenever she wants to pass on that asset, she can make that child or grandchild the trustee without even that point. You don't lose it. You can still be a trustee yourself and make your grandchildren or your children a trustee. You don't lose it. The trust still owns it. But that's a way of passing your wealth to your posterity without necessarily having to pay loads of taxes. And obviously it covers you. It protects you from many other perspectives as well. If there's a claim, if there's all sorts of things.
I understand that. I don't think, was that what you was asking, Fiona?
Yes, it was actually. It was, yeah.
Now that you said that,
it's clear in my head.
What's not clear in my head, if I have a piece of land, is it a better idea to lease it rather than to sell it? So can I lease it and let somebody else build on it and I still keep hold of the ownership of the land?
No, that's a bad idea.
Okay, that's what I thought you was asking.
The good idea behind that is, if you have a land that has the potential to do a JV with someone who understands
planning. Explain JV, Jack.
Do a JV.
What's a JV?
A joint venture.
That's it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. A joint venture. Okay. So Agnes, reach out to me. I will look at the piece of land. I can sign an option agreement with you. Option agreement. It's not a lease. It's an option agreement. If let's say we end up getting planning permission on that, not just that you will get the money asking price, you may even be able to negotiate profits from the planning uplift, which becomes a much better deal. Lease option or leases do not kind of work in that space. Again, like I said, depending on the use of the land, there can be many different options.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Agnes. Right. Again, reach out to me. I'd be more than happy to look at it.
Okay.
All right. Brilliant.
Hey, Jack, I have a question.
Hey,
can I hear?
Yeah, how are you? Excellent.
I'm loving it. Come on, bring it on.
My question about the 10 grand thing, which Isabella brought up, which was a fantastic question. Nice one, Isabella. My question is, what's the difference between the service accommodation? Because when you said that, I was thinking rent. You said, in central London, for example, to get your money back. What's the difference? Because you said service accommodation, but isn't the same thing as rent?
It is, yes.
Okay, it is, right. Because I thought maybe there's something special, different.
No, it's exactly the same thing. Just different words.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, if I get that 10 grand, I'm coming to you, Jack, and I'll be on this program to prove what you say. If not, you have to forfeit something, because this is the challenge. If I follow you and say, Jack, I have threatened all my family and they've given me the money and I'm coming to you to guide me because I've promised them some percentage and that doesn't happen, I'm going to send it all to you.
Am I speaking with Sina?
Yes, you are.
Okay, yes. So Sina, here is something. Okay,
I'm the whole family members to you.
Here is a disclaimer. Here is a disclaimer, Sina. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing ever in this world comes with a guarantee. Okay.
Of course.
Here is a conversation I had about a month ago with an executive, a C-level executive of a large corporation. Okay. There's a company based in central London near the bank station. He called me up. He had known me for a very long time. He called me up. He said, the ex-CEO of that company, we used to provide service to that company. He said, the ex-CEO's daughter is coming here for graduation, you know, to do a graduation. And she's looking for a temporary space to rent out. And she can't find anything, even though they're prepared to pay £300 a day. They are not able to find a temporary accommodation for her, even though they're prepared to pay £300 a day, and she needed it for 3 months. She was studying in, this is the university she was going to, which is the one on A40 when you go past King's Cross. Doesn't even know that name of the uni?
I can't remember.
There's a uni there, okay? But we are talking about when you go past Queen's Cross on the left-hand side or the right-hand side, there's a uni, there's loads of student campuses there. She wasn't able to find a space at the uni campus. So she was looking for a temporary accommodation and prepared to pay that kind of money. Even then, they couldn't find anything. That's just a clue for you. Again, the reason I gave you a disclaimer, no one can give you a guarantee. But what I can tell you is people still pay $300 a day, $400, $500 a day to stay in a Knightsbridge flat or a Mayfair flat. We all know all this, right? Okay. This is simple method of doing something. If you put your heart into it, you can go and rent out a flat there for, I don't know, let's say 10 grand a month, right? And you can easily make that money, you know, and a lot more, but you got to put your heart into it. If you don't put your heart into something, the likely is you're not going to make money.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll take it under advisement. Thank you.
Right, Ian next, and then
Jack, you mentioned that you have to learn all the time and you have to learn like every day, what I'm agree with, but my question is because the internet is so over information, so how to find the right resources, how to find the right people you should learn from, how to find links where you can, who you can trust, actually.
Okay, Ian, so I go with my gut instinct, okay? I'm a massive believer in gut instinct. If your gut is, you know, if let's say you come to me, hypothetically, okay? And you say, you know what, I'd like to learn from you. You don't have to tell me. You have to listen to your gut. What is your gut saying to you? What is this? Is this guy Jack? Is he real? Is he talking? What is he doing? Let me check on him. You know, let me check what he is about. Who is this guy, right? And the same goes for anyone you look at from learning, right? First, go and pick up a few books and read so you at least have the basic understanding of what you're doing. And then once you've done that, and now it's time to get some consulting, get some mentoring, get some training, use your gut feeling, man. Gut feeling goes a long way. I mean, there are times when I'd look at a deal and it just looks right, logically, by numbers. But my gut is telling me, you know, something isn't right. And in most cases, yeah. I promise you, I will not go for that deal. Okay. And likewise, when I'm learning from someone, even right now, I have two mentors. Okay. And when I'm looking at them, you know, they have 30 plus years experience. And my gut instinct knows these are the people that have been through the fluctuations and the ups and the downs of life and all sorts of things. They can tell me what I need to focus on. All the learning that you see, the reason for all of this is not just books, but consistent training, consistent mentoring, consistently evolving. Remember, money is just a byproduct of bringing value. Yeah. And at the same time, money is just a tool. It's like a hammer. But people give money a lot more value than what it deserves. So for me, when I make more money, I'm always investing back into myself so I can learn more and make more money at the back of that. But go with your gut instinct. I hope that answers your question to some.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Now, Fiona, your hand is still up. Did you have another question, Masui?
No, that should have come down.
Okay, right. Yeah. So I am going, this has been fantastic, actually. I'm so buzzing, it's been brilliant. Oh, thank you so much, Jack. But you might need to stick around, my friend, because somebody else might have another question.
You know what? I do have to apologize. I do have to shoot off. Reason?
No, I know. I'm teasing.
I have two very young kids, and I will get killed if I don't go. Bye to everyone. Okay? You guys have a fantastic day. Again, if there's anything I can help you with, serve, please reach out to Jennifer. She'll be in touch with me. And then have an absolutely amazing day.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed that. That was just fantastic. Awesome. Now, before it gets any later, let me get Michaela and Anthony on and do this.